Hi, folks. The podcast you're about to hear was myself and Martin's conversation with Sam McElwain, who many of you will know from previous contributions to the Tortoise Shack, and he's always got a brilliant insight, particularly in line with what's happening in the unionist loyalist community and how this assembly election is perceived. If you want to hear all these podcasts as they're produced, as they're done, as they're recorded and put out, they're all available on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Including right now the three live podcasts from last Sunday night at the Sugar Club, which was another fantastic evening. All of that is there right now, plus about 800 posts, and you don't have to listen to me ask you for the support, because let's face it, I hate having to do it, and I do have to do it, and you hate listening to it. It would be, you know, there are thousands of people listening to these podcasts, and I'm eternally grateful for that, but I would really appreciate it if some of you would just click the link, patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and see if there's a level there that you're comfortable supporting us at. It makes all the difference. It really helps keep this show on the road. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and he's here. And he can't help himself, can he? You should have heard the noise as we opened the crypt door.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. You're so nice. No. Nice to be back doing a few pods, and nice to be back chatting to Sam again.
Yeah, no, we are. We're going to be covering in a big way over the next 2 weeks the assembly elections, and because we should be. That's the simple fact. But we thought, who better than to talk to than our friend, our unionist, loyalist, and left-leaning friend, Sam McElwain. And by the way, Sam, thanks. It was great to see you in person the other night at the Tortoise Shack Live in the Sugar Club. Thanks for coming. It was lovely to meet you.
It was entirely my pleasure to be down and to meet up with so many guys that I've got a chance to interact with through the podcast on Twitter. So to put proper faces to those names was brilliant.
Did you know Don O'Leary, who from the Cork Life Centre, walks in and he says, "Is that the guy you used to have on from Belfast there?" I think he went over to say hello to you then.
He came over and shook my hand, and a guy like that, knowing who I am, was quite that humbling, to be honest.
Yeah, he said, no, he's an absolute legend, but I'll edit that out. We won't leave that in, Martin. He's not a legend. But no, Sam, look, the reason we want to have this conversation is because it's been referred to as one of the most important elections in the history of Northern Ireland. I don't know where you stand on that, or whether that's hyperbole. But nonetheless, this is where we are. We're less than 2 weeks out. There's a lot of people saying, you know, that the big issues again, what we talk about all the time, health, housing, education, social mobility, tackling inequality. Some of that is there's attempts within some of the politics to push it back into the simplicity of them ones and those ones and keeping them ones out. Give us your sense of where it is right now, Sam, and how things are actually shaping up, in your opinion.
When the election cycle first started, I would have agreed that there was going to be a really nasty, venomous election. There was windows being broken, there was threats being made, people being put out of areas, posters torn down. But it seems to have settled right and quick. As far as it being one of the most crucial elections, I don't think so. I've seen other elections, and I think they were more crucial in and around the Good Friday Agreement and post that. We're on the anniversary of Leary McKee's murder up in Derry, and we're seeing rats back up there again. I think the underlying tensions are there, but they're not caused by this election. I think the election is a side event to those other things. As far as Northern Ireland goes, every election is important. It's always, you mean, it's the old firm of politics. It's who's going to come out on top. It could be a nonsense game of football, but you still, if it's the Rangers, it's Celtic supporters club. Now, until the Rangers, they'll have to be Celtic in my eyes, and vice versa. So, yes, the election will be important, but it's not one of the most critical. And the reason I'm also playing this down is there's no guarantee that they're going to take their seats. This could all be a show, and then at the end of it, we can have what we've got this week, nothing. So, crucial, no. It could be a glorified opinion poll in my eyes at some point, and probably a head count.
I think that's a really important point that you've made there. That it's, that's why I refer to the, is it hyperbole? Because it may well be that the situation whereby this is what's happening, but in the mix, you know, you're talking about a glorified opinion poll.
there will be still a significant shift, it does look like, in terms of the, you know, Sinn Féin achieving, if the polls are to be believed, the opportunity to have a first minister for the first time. So that is significant.
They've always been first minister.
Oh, no, I mean, hang on. I want listeners to be aware of this. Sam always says we should have just done this jointly at the outset, and we got it wrong from the outset. And actually, I thought that was one of the best suggestions I'd ever heard on it. Why did we start this hierarchy? And that's where it gives a thing.
It was a compromise, Tony, at the time, and that's what it was. It was a compromise to get them in at the time. I don't know if you remember, Sam. It was a compromise to have a unionist or a loyalist first minister was a compromise to keep the assembly moving.
Yeah, but who called for the compromise? Because the guys that I've spoken to didn't. They'd have preferred a joint. And I'm going back as far as the 70s when the likes of Plum Smith was debating whether we should have a joint executive. They wanted a joint first minister at that point, and they used that exact term. It's in his book. It's a matter of record. So this was years in the making. And at that point, loyalists were still forward thinking. They wanted a joint executive. They wanted joint first ministers, and they wanted them to be accountable.
But do you not see the parallels there with the protocol that they had agreed to something and then they backed off what they agreed to and looked for further compromises, which diluted in the first place what they had achieved?
The meaning that we see of the protocol surface, there is so much going on behind that. I think we have a prime minister that I wouldn't trust as far as I could throw him. I would also say that there are people in power within Europe. You're playing the power game as well. And it's not just down to one side. They're both in this to show face. They're both in there to save face. And they're both in there to try and save their jobs. And to be honest, as soon as we can get rid of Boris and get somebody in there who is maybe slightly more confident, we may see a better outcome for this deal.
I just if you go to the election, though, itself, you know, it does seem to me, reading some of the coverage, and we could mock the coverage from the South in a while, because, you know, they didn't even have the right amount. The Irish Times didn't even know how many seats were available and up for grabs. So I'm sorry to be laughing about it, but Sam, I know you were like, oh, no, here now, you know, if you're going to cover it, at least get the basics right. But nonetheless, the unionist vote as such, so part of it, I do think people, from what I've read, seem compelled to almost give the DUP a kick as well for letting them down for the last number of years. They're not coming on board. There does seem to be that sentiment. Am I wrong?
No. If you ask a DUP politician, and they're the same across the board, all parties, if you ask a politician, how's it going on the doors? Oh, it's going great. Yeah. Fantastic. We're going
great.
To be a
great. I always send all my canvassing friends a picture of, remember the old rabbit ears you put on the telly? And I'd say that's the only great reception on the doors you'll ever get.
But I have been talking to people who have chased them, including my mother, of course, who's Twitter famous now, and other constituents. High ranking DUP MLAs are getting chased from doors, and in front of witnesses. It's hard for them to say anything else, but I know people who are going to push further to the right, as I was saying, and go to the TUV. And I know people who are coming slightly more central and going to the Ulster Unionists. But I reckon the DUP might take a bit of a pace. And I think they're playing a very smart game in what they're doing with the protocol rallies and some of the wording they're using. They're trying to shore up transfers and hoping that maybe whoever their sort of voters are migrating to will transfer a second to them. So they'll give them a bit of a pace and they'll get a bloody nose, but hopefully they'll pull in later on down the line a bit.
Sam, you mentioned there earlier that this could well turn to what we've seen time and time again before, just sectarian headcount, and it could well turn to that. That means that the middle ground has lied, that there is no middle ground. When you go sectarian headcounts, it means that the middle ground is lost completely. How is the middle ground faring in the elections?
Well, the Alliance, I've always said the Alliance has peaked. I don't think they'll fall too far back from where they are. But the problem being, if people are allowed to engineer this idea that it is a crucial election, and it is a breaking point, and everybody must stand and be accountable for being one side or the other, then that's when the middle ground will suffer the most, because those votes that migrated from other unionists and other nationalist parties to them. First off, their vote might think, well, this is the time that I need to stake a claim. I can't be middle ground anymore. I need to be green or I need to be orange. And they'll move away from it. But the Lions have a core vote, and I think they'll hold that okay. So a slight regression maybe in the middle ground, which is always slightly dangerous. You like to have a balance across the board, and the more that we polarise to the left and to the right, or to the orange and the green, and the middle ground shrinks, then the more destabilised we become.
And when you mentioned that kind of the alliance, so like I can't recall the gentleman's name, but I remember the PPP won their first seat, was it in 2016, and then lost it in 2017, which is also a terrible thing to say about how often you have elections in the Northern Ireland Assembly. But nonetheless, there are Green Party candidates who are out there, and I'm always very careful to say I believe the Green Party in the North is very different from the Green Party in the South. Martin is smiling at me, but can I ask you, so when you talk about the alliance holding ground, Naomi Long has played a fairly decent campaign so far. So her media hasn't been bad. Doug Beattie has been very interesting though, because he's managed to garner a lot of sympathy because of some of the attacks he's had on him personally and on people who, and he's spoken out about things, you know, calling for cooler heads. And I know there was grief about old tweets, and, you know, we've all been down that road, Martin. But nonetheless, how do you think they're going to gain, or do you, as much as, let's, if I was to give you, make you to call this, and you can tell me, Tony, shut up. I'm not going to call it. But you mentioned the TUV. Outside of Jim Allister, I don't know he's coming up against some difficult people, actually. So he's got some good candidates to run against. I don't know how much of that vote will split that way and how much might actually come back towards the UUP.
Jim will probably secure a seat. If you take Robin Swan, who I think will probably be a shoo-in in North Antrim.
I just want to say it again. He's a dangerous man.
Apparently so. if you take him and possibly the two DUP that sit up there that can be quite effective, you're probably looking at Jim Allister and plus one, but the plus one will be decided. I think what the TUV will suffer elsewhere away from North Antrim is that the candidates are probably well known within a small circle. And the thing about MLA election constituencies, we used to say that if you stand for council, you have to be known in a housing estate pretty well in a local area. But to be an MLA, you have to be known throughout six housing estates. That's the way we always broke it down. And I don't know whether the TUV candidates they have standing elsewhere have that reach. And that's unfortunate for them. But there will be a protest vote. How much of that they can get together, I do not know. And that's the other thing. People will say, oh, thousands of people love Jamie Bryce and he should get elected. Those thousands are spread over every constituency in Northern Ireland.
Well, if I remember correctly, was it 127 votes? Am I right about that?
In his constituency, yeah.
That's insane. 127. Yeah. I mean, seriously, fuck's sake, you're not even a player. You know, you're not.
Well, he's carved out a nice niche for himself as
I don't know. It's like, I suppose for me, it's like you could say the same about the Nationalist Party in Ireland. They've carved out a niche for themselves.
But they don't have an electoral mandate. I would flip that on its head and say to you, Jamie Bryson has as much influence in our society as some of the commentators write in our Sunday papers, Martin.
Well, look, I agree, but that doesn't mean that they're any good either. They're shit, Tony. I'm listening to Sam talking, and it must be frustrating for Sam. Sam is, and I'll say this loosely, of the left, Sam. You want to see progressive politics. You want to see, you know, proper housing. You want to see proper healthcare. It must be frustrating that in that maelstrom of wanting this stuff, where the rest of the world has moved on, particularly the rest of Europe, that you are stuck in a sectarian headcount, and that the issues that really, really matter aren't getting addressed. And that has to be terribly frustrating.
It is, but they're also being voiced in the doorsteps. The guys that I'm talking to are saying that the protocol is being mentioned, but it's not prolific. What they're getting talked about is mental health first and foremost. They've got guys coming to the door, they've lost family members and friends this year, and it's astronomical. They're talking about the homeless issue. They're talking about housing issue. They're talking about access to peace has been a major one of the doorsteps this year. After COVID, people trying to get back in, they actually see the GP face to face. They're talking about waiting lists. They're talking about the incident we had in Newry a week ago, where the young lady passed away because an ambulance had to be tasked from Belfast to get there. I mean, they're talking about issues that on a day-to-day basis they feel threatened by. They feel that the ambulance service isn't there to cover them. They feel that there's waiting times at the hospital for their mother or the father who's got cancer. They feel that they've got an issue that they need to speak to a GP privately and face-to-face with. And they're looking at friends and family who are struggling with mental health issues. And although the protocol is there, it is there, and they do think about it. This is not what's impacting day to day. It really isn't.
Do you know what, folks? If I could clip that and let you all listen to it, the struggle we always talk about in terms of what we want, it is obviously a shared challenge to everybody. But the way you just summed that up there, that's what happens when we talk about red and green and what's happening, because we end up leaving so many people behind. And you've all, you know, no matter who wins this election, we don't even know if there's going to be another one called in you know, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months because of these issues. Now, and that is not to say that the protocol doesn't matter. Of course, we've had this conversation on the podcast, so it's not all news. Your cultural identity is important to you.
Yes.
I wouldn't dare say it's not something that matters, but actually social mobility, inequality, and that incident in Newry of someone who was, what is it, the ambulance was 5 minutes away and took 35 minutes to get there, I believe was the...
Well, they didn't have any in the South Eastern Trust, so they had to task it from Belfast, and at 40 minutes, it doesn't matter how quick that ambulance is going, it's going to be 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And we had some reminders this weekend of the bad old days as well, Sam. We saw petrol bombs being thrown in Derry. And you know, it's a reminder of the bad old days, Tiffany. And nobody wants the bad old days back. And I think that's universal across the spectrum, no matter what angle you're coming back from. Yeah. We don't want the bad old days back.
And a lot of the kids don't know the bad old days. A lot of the kids like going to the nightclubs in Belfast. They'd like having friends from anywhere and everywhere. They like the freedoms that we never had growing up. And I want to make sure that's still the case. I want to make sure that they don't have to go back to a city centre that was sealed off at night by barriers, or where you got checked by security on the way into a shop, not the way out in case you were stealing, but on the way in case you were going to leave some, you know. I don't want them to go through that. I certainly don't want to get to the situation where they are segregated from birth with no choice in the matter. If you want to segregate yourself from other people, that's fine, but that's your choice.
But they are still closing, you know, gates at night at certain times in between the communities. They're still closing certain sections. And I mean, Rory spoke to Take Back the City Belfast about the land on the Mackies, about wanting to build housing on it and trying to you know, help tackle something and the difficulties there, whereby some people still see it as it'll, you know, oh, housing for all. Oh, what does all mean? All of us are all of us, you know, and you can't have that in a free and fair society. You simply can't. If I can go back to the election, though, if you really looking at it now, polling says, you know, Sinn Féin, it's theirs to lose, I suppose. But at the same time, there's a broad unionist vote there. Has the any candidates sort of that you think that we should look out for who may actually, you know, offer an alternative? Any candidates who are showing the loyalist unionist community that actually, you know, okay, we may not like all the parameters we're working within, but we need to work to make that better, and we go that way, as opposed to the defiant nonsense, I have to say. I saw Jim Allister tweeting it earlier about, you know what to do. I have no compromise. You know what to do.
Yeah. As a loyalist, I would love to see two or three of the PEP candidates standing. Bennett East Belfast, Hutchison in North Belfast, and Russell Watton up in North Antrim. This, to get an authentic left of centre loyalist voice in Storm at the game of, oh, it would just be the jackpot as far as I'm concerned. That would bring that would bring loyalism to the fore, as I would say. Even if you get one of those guys returned, at least people in the province can go to that one person if they think they're not being represented by other unionist parties, if they think that their identity is not being properly related. One of those three or all three would be fantastic. As for the other, this is the thing with Stormy, there's going to be a lot of familiar faces returned. And when you do the same thing over and over, why would you expect anything different? You know, this defiance, Jim Allister is great for saying bring down Stormont and he's been taking a seat for the last couple of years. You know, he hasn't missed a day as far as I'm concerned. And Stormont's for somebody who hates an institution so much, he keeps turning up for it, okay. It's... I remember the DUP protesting when the Ulster Unionists were going to take their seat with the SDLP in the first Stormont executive and saying that they would never do it. And I remember the good old doctor taking his seat quite happily when he became first minister. So what people say and what people do are two entirely different things as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. There's a way you campaign and then there's a way you govern, you know. But you mentioned the SDLP. They've had a bit of a mare. And by the way, I do think Billy Hutchinson will take a seat. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's, you know, looking at that. And although that being said, that's probably because I follow on Twitter many of the people who seem to be out beside him all the time.
Billy and Russell up in Andrew, they have been quite formidable in their councils and they're extremely active on the ground within their communities. So they've got strong chances. The SDLP probably will return the normal faces that they have. And they've got quite a sort of diverse age range, and the split between male and female is probably the best in most of the parties. And I do see a lot of goodwill and a lot of their policies towards other people.
Yeah.
But I think that the problem with the SDLP is that they're targeting the wrong people. They're speaking out against unionists. They need to win votes in the nationalist community.
Oh, this is going to kill you. You sound like Mick Fieldy. He said this to me earlier.
He
turned to me and he said, Tony, the problem they're having is that they're having a go at the DUP specifically, rather than addressing, let's sort of sideline nationalism and talk about.
Don't we have the same issue going on down here, Tony?
Of course.
It's the exact same issue. It's an attack on the party rather than on the politics.
There's also that element of, we have a lot of parties of the left who punch left and kiss right, you know. So
you don't expect young Billy from the Shankill Grove to vote SDLP.
No.
What they need to be attacking is Sinn Féin and the nationalist community and taking votes in areas that they need to be targeting that, and they're not. In fact, I think this went as far as just to totally ignore Sinn Féin.
You've talked about young people, Sam, and I presume we're in the same situation we're always in with elections, that if the section that never come out and vote, we could actually change things. And I presume it's the same situation. But do you think there is more motivation on the young nationalist side to come out and vote than there is on the young loyalist side to come out and vote?
No, I think the young loyalist side are being split on why they're being motivated, but they're still being motivated. There is those that are being motivated by the protocol protests and thinking that this is the doomsday that they've always feared. In fact, it's not what they fear, it's what their parents have feared. They don't know what that is yet. So I think they're being motivated by that. There's also those on the loyalist side who are being motivated by social policies, by the LGBT questions. They're being motivated by freedom of movement and university fees. They are being motivated. And it's the first time that I have seen more young people asking questions. And I also believe that there are parties out there who are actually actively recruiting people, youth people, to come in and speak to the younger ones. They're speaking to, you know yourself, the language that some of the young ones use is not.
Oh, yeah, it's a different language.
We need to get out of the way, Martin.
Yeah.
Well, it's encouraging that you say that, Sam, and I'll tell you why it's encouraging. And we look to Portugal quite a bit, but the template for Portugal was lower turnout, socialist government, higher slightly turnout, big massive turnout, you're not getting rid of our socialist government. That's it, full stop. And it would be nice to think that there might be some pathway for that kind of progression in Northern and in Southern Ireland, by the way.
If there was a shock party to come through and be totally sort of left to centre, socialist leaning, and for whatever reason were put into power and showed what they can do, then the youth might want to protect that, yeah. But yeah, it's getting that shock result first. And who is that shock result?
Yeah,
we've got plenty of parties in the north here that tend to be left, and they're not left.
I agree 100% with that, because I find it very, very disappointing. Like we said, Martin, who was the first people to put it to Mary Lou MacDonald that you can't talk about, you know, repeal the eighth and dining out on that, and then
I know and, you have to, there has to be consistency.
There has to be, and we have to make sure. But again, I don't even want to categorize it, because it's easier then again to say, you know, again, them ones and those ones, as we keep saying. But I'm interested in the, you know, like the some of the stuff. There's is benefits, and I do think this is going to. I do think this will start to play out, Sam. And I'll put this to you that the benefits of the protocol, should it be reviewed, should it be, you know, made more palatable, shall we say? I think the benefits to Northern Ireland are there for an administration that makes Stormont work now, because the opportunity is there to avail of a Northern Ireland that can, because it's something that. You've said it to me. We need to make Northern Ireland work for Northern Ireland, okay? Mm-hmm. But if they could do that with having the best of both worlds, by, you know, let's get rid of some of those restrictions on the Irish Sea border. Let's see what the EU can swallow on that, and let's see then how you get access to the single market still through, you know, being sharing the island with us. I think there's a great way forward and a great opportunity there for a Stormont that actually bloody works.
Yeah, I mean, people who I would have said in the past weren't exactly friendly towards Stormont. They didn't see it as a sort of productive entity on its own, are now coming to me and saying, we need Stormont to be working at least at their capacity, because something was better than nothing. At least if they're sitting, at least if they're going through the motions, at least if they're passing bills, then Northern Ireland can function. What they're frightened of is, if we start into this cycle of election collapse, I think London have their eye elsewhere. So nothing's going to move quick. I would also say that London probably, to a certain extent, enjoy the protocol protests. It's a lot more of a leverage when they...
Yeah.
Also, when they go to Europe and they say, can we have these? Because if you don't, this is what's going to happen. And there's a sample for you. There's a smorgasbord of events happening in Northern Ireland right now. And unless we start getting concessions, that's going to get worse, and it's all your fault. I think it plays into their hands that there is tension here and that there is outbursts.
Can I make one point on that, Martin? And tensions that they've made no real aims to try and dissuade themselves from like Mick took offense to me earlier saying that London has been diabolical on this. I think they have, in terms of this. I think Dublin's been incompetent, but not necessarily diabolical, if that makes sense. I think there's an incompetency whereby, you know, we only have to think back to last year when the Taoiseach referred to Northern Ireland as overseas. So, you know, there's all that sort of...
Isn't it interesting, though, Sam, that Varadkar, who wouldn't be considered all that nationalist down here, in fact, wouldn't be considered nationalist at all, that he has become the bête noire of the anti-nationalist movement up north. I mean, it makes me laugh. I mean, if you're going to pick somebody who's to dislike because they have a nationalist viewpoint, like Leo Varadkar is not it. I mean, he has the most tepid viewpoint of all.
I know, but he's in the south, so that'll do. I mean, that's enough to condemn anybody in certain people's eyes. I mean, some of the language he used in the round Brexit about threats of violence in the borders and bombs returning, he probably didn't intend it to be the way it was, but it is going to be taken that way up here. And as seen as a leader of a European country making threats, it just adds fuel to the fire. It didn't really need to be there. But for Radka, although he's not nationalist, he's not our friend.
I am the enemy of my enemy. Are we in this position?
Probably. Yeah, but I also think that he is going to be too distracted to be caring about up here as well.
I bet you can bet your ass.
Everything he says is for a different audience, Mark. It's not for me.
No, you can bet your ass he's too distracted.
I had a good run around Dublin on Sunday morning, or Monday morning after the event, and I have to say, beautiful city, very London-esque in the way it looks and feels sometimes, very, very thriving and cultural and stuff. But the underbelly that I witnessed even on those streets, and that wasn't going into the housing estates, the homelessness, the drug issue was horrifying. And it didn't bring fear to me. It brought a sense of, I think that Leo is going to have a big enough fire to put out in Dublin. Never mind anywhere else.
And I agree with you there, Sam. I think you're dead right. These are the social issues. And again, the social issues that are up north that are flying under the radar as everybody plays politics. And there's real people getting hurt. You're right. Varadkar is going to have to deal with that. I mean, what is the point in having beautiful streets when you can't look down? You can't look down. You're not allowed to look down. If you look down, you see the poverty. Mm-hmm. So what's the point in that? What is the point in a city that is workable, livable, but there are two tiers in it, and just don't look down. Look up at the Christmas lights at Christmas, but don't look at the tents. And the same is happening in Northern Ireland, increasingly happening in Northern Ireland. So I think these issues, these social issues, will overtake the what I would call the more Neanderthal politics that's been going on for decades.
Rightly so. We have an issue in Belfast streets at the minute. It is dwarfed by what I seen in Dublin on that one morning, but it is starting, and I don't want to see it develop any further. I don't want to see it getting the same proportion.
I didn't anticipate going here, Sam, but you mentioned mental health coming up on the doors. We spoke to Tony Doherty when we were up in Derry, and we were just having a conversation, Martin, over a cup of coffee. And he was talking about mental health issues for young people and struggling to get, you know, to get seen, get the needs that they want. And he talked about opioid abuse as well as an issue, you know, where people were relying on. It was just, look, if we can't get them the support, just medicate them. And then it becomes that. Is that and I know it's endemic here as well. It's just not cool to talk about it. Is that something that you know, you're seeing more and more, because parents are looking at, you know, children who are not children anymore, they're young adults, they're in their 20s now, and this is where the struggle is, and it's that they can't leave the nest, and it's that inequality whereby the mental health issues are building up.
I have an 18-year-old family member who has two friends, and to get this day straight, last Tuesday, he was helping one send him to a hostel because he'd been made homeless. And the other one, he was going to visit in hospital because he tried to take his own life on Saturday night. Two 18-year-old boys. And people are coming to my door and they're pointing the flags and they're telling me about protocols. And I'm trying to support a family member because he's reaching out to two of his friends who are in desperate situations. That is where we are failing. That is why I'm left of center. That is why I'm socialist in my thinking. Because as much as I am a British man, I am not going to stand watch two 18-year-old boys be put in that situation without helping out and put the protocol first before that. The protocol is going to sit there and it's not going to go anywhere. It's not a tomorrow issue. It's a next year issue. It's a year after issue. The today issue is those 18-year-old boys that are attempting suicide because they think there's nothing else for them.
And I suppose that's where it all needs to focus. That's where it should be focused on. We should be, instead of a protocol, which whether it remains or goes, is not going to make a huge amount of fucking difference to anybody. It's not going to provide one more hospital bed, one more roof. It's not going to do anything like that. We should concentrate. And I think that's both north and south. And I think we're both heading to the same place on elections, by the way, where there is a kind of a seismic change going to happen right across both sides.
Well, in that seismic change, I mean, we're talking about Leo taking back over in the south. If Mary Lou gets a chance to take over in the south, I don't think she's going to be looking north either. Because
I have a different opinion on that.
I think the mess that she's inheriting is going to occupy her reign for 4 years. It is as simple as that. I do not think, although it's going to be there again, it's going to be a next year issue. The issue that Mary Lou McDonald's going to have to face when she takes power, if she takes power in the South, it's going to be the homelessness, it's going to be the drug addiction, it's going to be the
mental health. I'll just disagree for a second. I'll say that their impetus is going to be to get the border poll. One way or another.
And I actually think that's interesting, Martin, that you say that, because I think they're coming to terms with, when you see Mary Lou yesterday saying she wants to start a conversation with the, you know, let's come to the table with the unionist and loyalist community, join me in this process. I actually think that they know that it's not something that's going to look. Martin, did you see the polling?
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Only 30% of people said in the North that they'd vote for. 30%. You're nowhere near a successful poll if you go into something like that. I mean, you'd be mad, because then if you try it then and you're as disastrously low as that poll suggests it is, you won't be able to try again for a decade.
You lose traction when these things happen. You get a bloody nose. I don't think they'll ever give up, but... They will never lose momentum. Yeah,
they won't give up, and it's and Martin is right it is definitely, you know, there's always, say you said housing and health and all the rest of it. If they're 1 and 1B, this is 1A.
It is. Sam, there has to be some deliverance if they get power for 5 years. There has to be some delivery somewhere along the line. You cannot do the 5 years and come out at the other end and say we did nothing on Northern Ireland. You can't.
Yeah, but hang on. Can I another? I'm pushing back on you, Martin. Sorry, Sam, and then I'll let you come in. But like Micheál Martin's Shared Ireland initiative is actually the blueprint Mary Lou, if she was to become Taoiseach, will inherit. And she's not going to be able to rip that up, because it's like Sláinte Care. It's not a government.
And then you say about Sláinte Care and what happened to Sláinte Care, Tony. No. You know, it got ripped up.
No, but it hasn't. But my point is it has cross-party support.
It got ripped up.
It hasn't been ripped up.
Oh, come on.
It hasn't been implemented. No. And that's exactly the same thing.
No, you sound like a politician.
But you're cracking up, because the simple fact is, if Mary Lou came in and ripped up what Micheál Martin left in place, she looks like she's backing away from.
I just think that Sinn Féin cannot do 5 years in government without delivering on something above and beyond all else.
If they have 5 years, what is the time scale? How do you time out a campaign to start a border poll, especially when they can't call themselves and has to be the Secretary of State of Northern Ireland? And you're looking at polls that are 30%. Not in a million years to call a border poll with 30%.
No, he won't. I agree with you.
And he probably would be a 60% poll came back consistently across a year or two.
I think 2 years of pro United Ireland rhetoric coming through the media instead of the rhetoric we get, oh, we're never going to be ready for this.
Pro Ireland rhetoric. No, it's not. It hasn't happened in a century. It's not going to happen in the next five.
No. You're both talking shite now, because give me 5 years and tell me we can have an NHS for Ireland, and then we can talk about United Ireland, because there's so many things. The logistics of this have to be done, and that's where Sinn Féin could. That's why I was saying, making the point, that Sinn Féin might be lucky here. This is their election to lose in the North. They might be lucky, because if they can make Stormont work, I think the North is set up to benefit from the best of both worlds. I know there's issues around the protocol. I think they can be worked through. I think the economy could start to work, that people will be better off. And Sinn Féin might just be lucky to be the people sitting there when it happens. You know, sometimes that's what happens to governments. They happen to be the people who get the reins of power as things start to turn. And then if situations turn, it makes things, people go, well, actually, I can see this now. We're already, you know, working north to south, south to north. And that's where you can do that. But I genuinely, looking at those figures at 30%, Martin, I'd say there's a lot more planning to be done, and that's someone who speaks to Colin Harvey all the time.
I'm not disagreeing, and I don't. But I think, in political terms, Sinn Féin cannot hold office for 5 years and not deliver something.
not go for it anyway. They have to
deliver something, Tony. And even if it is that, if it's the last year of government and it's right, we'll throw the dice in and do the border poll and deal with the results, whatever way it comes.
They can't call the border poll. It's not their call.
I know. There's an element of you've got to force somebody's hand to get that to happen, Sam.
But Sam, you did see Boris Johnson putting the for sale sign up on the Union there the other day, did you? I actually think
North of Ireland has more chance of being sold out by Great Britain than it does by anybody else.
I also think that you guys in the South, as much as people crawl out for, really don't want this yet either.
There's a lot who don't, Sam. Yeah. You're right. There's a lot.
We like the attic, Sam. We've always liked the attic.
It's a good holiday destination, but you wouldn't mind having a sort of lease on it for a couple of weeks, but you don't want to be up here.
We can see that, you know, if you encompass it, if you have an All-Ireland, and it's not what Ireland is now, and it's not what Northern Ireland, it's a new concept, something different altogether. You can absolutely see that that's going to benefit North and South. Really, the biggest problem about this is keeping identities within some sort of united country. And that's really what it's about.
I don't even know. Is it keeping identities or just having a shared space for everybody to
I think everybody's
identities are a neutral space.
Yeah.
I think everybody's identities are very important. I think if anything we've learned about this process talking to people, Tony, is that their identities are extremely important to them. And we have to respect that.
I got to give a shout out to the girls on Built Different who told us all about that Black and Irish identity the other evening. And
it was really interesting.
I have to tell you, it educated everybody who was lucky enough to be sitting there to hear what that meant, you know. And there's three white men now sitting here having this conversation, but it was fascinating. So we talk about what culture and what identity means. Yeah, I'm going to recommend that for when it comes out. You don't want to miss that one,
Sam. We could stay chatting all evening, but there is a lot to do. You have a lot of work to do, a lot of doors to knock on, talk to people, talk socialist left issues, get some sort of
Sam. Sam wants to watch Man United versus Liverpool.
No, he doesn't. Sam wants to do a lot of things other than that.
Yeah. So thanks very much for having this conversation, Sam. I'm sure we'll be back to you over the course of this election, and we will be, of course. And we'll discuss, of course, the results at the other end. And has anything actually changed, or are we just back to where we were again?
I would say if you guys would want to talk just before the 5th, because at that point, the fever will be the highest, and then we can discuss it afterwards. Also, Tony, as I say, I mean, if Sick Note here wants to take a few more days off, I'll quite happily fill the shoes.
Do you know what, Sam? I am determined that one stage we're going to be doing where there'll be a regular Tortoise Shack slot, whether it's your own vehicle or I'm co-passenger. We'll be doing something. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for listening, folks. Back tomorrow with Brian Smith from the Greens. So that'll be interesting. He's in a very, very difficult situation trying to take a seat there, but nonetheless, we'll have that conversation with Brian. Talk to you all very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.